as my fellow professor Max has introduced me as one of the leading authors in the issue of correlation of international law and the constitutional law. But I wouldn't say about myself in this way. But because my colleagues, other my colleagues, Professor Kovler and Dr. Volkov, as well as other Russian authors, Professor Tuzmuhamedov from the Constitutional Court, Professor Mullerstone from the Tallinn University, and many other very prominent authors and scholars in our country, which wrote a lot about this issue. So, but nonetheless, let me continue our general topic, which is entitled as International Law and the Legal System of the Russian Federation, how they interact. So let me first cite some phrases of English and American professor William Butler. He writes, "To a degree absolutely without precedent in a millennium of Russian history, international treaties are being used by the Russian state as a means of integrating with the world political, economic, and cultural order. One might insist that Russia is among those states that use their legal system to enforce treaties." And then, "The current constitution makes the Russian Federation a jurisdiction in which individuals and juridical persons may invoke rights directly in domestic courts in accordance with or on the basis of the international obligations of the country." And he, Professor Butler, says again that it is undertaken at a more advanced level than in most countries of the world. The role of Russian domestic courts has been relatively revolutionary in this respect. So, I'm citing him in order to give you an outside view and independent view concerning our judicial system, our legal system. You may not trust me as a Russian talking about your own legal system, about your own country, but you can trust him. And after this citation, I believe that our talk about implementation of international law in the legal system of our country will give you a portion of a new knowledge and will let you compare it with the legal order of your own countries. So, the Constitution of the Russian Federation proclaims generally recognized principles and norms of international law and international treaties to be an integral part of the national legal system. It also establishes the direct application of international obligations in the domestic matters without their incorporation into their legislation. Not many countries go this way or follow this way. Let us try to classify, for example, the countries presented by our participants in this class. Some countries do quite the same as Russia does. They define in their basic laws or in constitutions the place of international law as integral part of the national legal system. Thus, its direct effect and its correlation with the national law. So let us see the slide. For example, some phrases from some constitutions. Constitution of Latvia. And international agreements which settle matters that may be decided by the legislative process shall ratification by the same. Then the Constitution of Finland. Oh, I'm sorry, there is some mistake, so the first group. This is the Constitution of Estonia. Generally recognized principles and rules of international law are an inseparable part of the Estonian legal system. You can also see something like that in the Constitution of Germany. It also proclaims international obligations as part of the legal system of the country. Something like that in the Constitution of the Republic of Korea, South Korea, Article 6. Have the same force and effect of law as domestic laws of the Republic of Korea, Israel. So I couldn't find, as it does not have an officially adopted constitution, I have found and let me refer to the document entitled The Spiritual Political Constitution of the Israeli State. The norms of international law are an integral part of union law, and the Council of Rebates did not express otherwise. They take precedence over the laws and they create rights and obligations. So this is the one group of countries which again proclaim international obligations as integral part of national law. Thus, they also proclaim direct effect of these obligations in the court trials. So, any person, any individual, any legal entity can resort to these obligations directly when defending their own private personal rights. Another group of countries. And another group consists of countries' constitutions of which just proclaim the generally recognized principles and norms of international law and proclaim just the general principle of international law, pacta sunt servanda. they also proclaim the process or scheme of integration of international law obligations into the domestic sphere. For example, so, the Constitution of Latvia and all international agreements which settle matters that may be decided by the legislative process shall require ratification by the same. Just general view, general provision. The Constitution of Finland. The provisions of treaties and other international obligations, insofar as they are of a legislative nature, are brought into force by an act. Otherwise, international obligations are brought into force by a decree. And the Constitution of Poland, you can also see Article 9 and Article 87. Just general provision about respect of international binding upon it.
So, can I ask you what's the difference between an act and a decree?
Pardon?
What's the difference between an act and a decree?
Act and decree? I guess the act is an act of a parliament. A decree is another kind of act for the president of the country. For a government and so forth. Okay? So just general provisions. And in these countries or in other countries which do like the same, all international obligations, international treaties are to be implemented in the internal legislation. They need implementation and preparation in the legislation. So they, these obligations do not have a direct effect in the legal system of the country. You can see the difference between two groups of the countries. Okay? And so now you can imagine that countries implement their international obligations in domestic affairs in different ways. And let me tell you about our legal system, about our legal tools and instrumentation used in our legal system. I suppose that the most appropriate and illustrative method to do this would be a method of case study. Case study. Professor Matsu already has told you about this. Actually, this method has been used not only in law, but also in other disciplines, like in economics, in sociology, in management, and so on. Case study method. So what does it mean? It means that in the beginning of every complete topic, I would cite the fragments of some real cases which held in the courts, in Russian courts, considered by the Russian courts, in order that you could imagine what questions arise or should arise in a trial. Then I will give some necessary information from the doctrine, legislature and judicial practice. And after that, you'll try to propose your own decisions of the case or cases, your own argumentation, your own reasoning, and so on. This will give you a possibility to evaluate real situations from the point of view of law, to propose your reasoning and to participate in discussion. So, topic one. What law operates and is implemented in the Russian legal system? So, in order that you are able to start to think of our issue, of our concrete questions, to start to reflect and so on, let me propose some fragments from real cases from our judicial practice. This one, citizen B, L, and V were justified by a verdict of the jury under Article 102 of the Criminal Code. Justified. The Cassation Chamber of the Supreme Court has left a sentence unchanged and it came into force. Then, on the protest of the Prosecutor General, the case was heard in the supervisory instance, in a more high level. The Presidium of the Supreme Court abolished the sentence and sent the case for a new trial to the Moscow Regional Court, to the first instance, again. The prosecutor insisted on a retrial in accordance with the Code of Criminal Procedure. The lawyer seeked a dismissal of the case under the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. So the lawyer was disagreed. Applicable legal norms. Criminal Procedure Code does not prohibit to abolish the sentence of acquittal or the sentence of non-guilty. Moreover, Part 3, Article 380, expressly provides for the abolition of sentences and the transfer of cases to a new judicial trial. Another applicable legal norms. International Covenant in paragraph 7 of Article 14 says, no one can be tried for the offense for which he was convicted or acquitted. No one. The judge of the Moscow Regional Court sent a request to the Constitutional Court of the Russian Federation. So, questions are, what was an answer of the Constitutional Court? What norms should be applied in this case? I mean, internal law, criminal procedure law, or international law, international covenant? What is the final decision adopted by the Moscow Regional Court? I mean, the first instance of the court. And case two for this topic. Married couple applied to court to adopt a girl as a daughter and to change her date and place of her birth. The Ishim City Court, Ishim, is a city. It's a city in the West Siberia.
Great.
and the human religion, which seems simple, satisfied their request on adoption and on change of God, surname, father name, and the place of birth. But refused to change the date of birth. It referred to the corresponding provision in the family code of the Russian Federation. Vice chairman of the Supreme Court of the Russian Federation appealed against this decision and asked to recall the judgment. He insisted that the applicable provision of the family code contradicts the Constitution of the Russian Federation and the Convention on Rights of a Child. Thus, on his opinion, the court had to apply the latter acts, but not the family code. So, apply the Convention, but not the family code. The process of the vice chairman was considered by the president of the human regional court. So, questions are, what was the resolution of the president? What was the final decision on the states, on your view? According to norms of what law it was decided? So, this cases I will introduce for the reporter for your consideration, for your own consideration and reasoning after some piece of information from the doctrine, from legislature, and from judicial practice. So, in order to come to answers on these questions mentioned above, we shall first to find out, to clear out the issue, what law does operate and function in the internal legal system, in the domestic legal system, what law? Let us initially recall that according to a common principle in all national jurisdictions, national law acts and to be implemented mainly and first of all on the territory of the country. First of all. So, domestic law. The main domestic sources Russian law in order of their hierarchy are the constitution, then federal constitutional laws, then federal laws, or I would say ordinary laws, and sub-statutory acts. The constitution. The Constitution is the highest source of main law or positive law in our country. And according to Part 1, Article 15 of the Constitution, the Constitution of the Russian Federation shall have supreme legal force and direct effect and shall be applicable throughout the entire territory of the country, entire territory. The direct effect was emphasized by the Russian Supreme Court. It stated, the Supreme Court, the supreme legal force and direct effect for the Constitution means that all constitutional norms have priority over laws and subordinate legislative rules. can't feel them. While hearing individual cases, the court must be guided by the Constitution of the Russian Federation directly. And must apply the Constitution as an act of direct effect in all necessary cases, in all necessary situations. So that is the Constitution. Federal constitutional laws. The Constitution also provides for a special type of law with hierarchical status below the Constitution, but higher than other federal laws, other ordinary laws. They are called as the federal constitutional law. And certain particularly important subjects must be regulated by these constitutional laws on the soil. And the law are federal laws. Again, I would say ordinary laws. Codes or other laws. The statute that sets out all the rules governing a big and specific sphere for relations is a code. For example, civil code, family code, again, criminal code, and etc. As in Western European civil law systems, codes have a preeminence as a central organizing structure of law in the country. Others are just federal laws. And the law, again, some law acts. Maybe I will show now in our slides. Okay, you will see. The Constitution, federal constitutional laws, federal laws, sub-law, or substitutory acts. The President, the government of the Russian Federation, and federal ministers may also adopt their normative acts, reflecting their place in the hierarchy of laws. These sources of law are referred to as substitutory law, substitutory acts. Acts of ministries shall correspond to acts of the government, and the latter ones to the presidential decrees. And the president has the power to annul governmental acts if they contravene those acts. Again, slide. So, these are the main types, main groups of sources of law in our country, in our legal system. And again, returning to some phrases above, according to the general principle of law, internal law, domestic law, operates and functions first of all in every country, as well as in our country also. Then, yes.
Where does international law
fit in? Just a second. Right now, international law. International law. So what is it and where is it in our legal system? In order to imagine the place and role of international law in the Russian legal system, We should start from the constitutional principle. It is a key point, a key condition of our talk, of our general talk. So, according to Part 4 of Article 15 of the Constitution, I am citing, generally recognized principles and norms of international law and the international treaties of the Russian Federation shall constitute an integral part of its legal system. Integral part. The principle in Article 15 is aimed to provide an external side of the rule of law state which proclaimed in Article 1 of the Constitution. And openness of the state to international community and to international law. This principle is to ensure and to guarantee observance of international obligations of Russia, first of all, human rights. And domestically, this rule, this principle, has become just crucial, indeed crucial, in the context of the legal guarantees of national implementation of Russia's international obligations. A turning point in changing and upgrading of the entire legal system of the country. National law, legal practice, and sense of justice. And here we should especially note at least three moments. Three. First, this principle is not an ordinary norm of the Constitution. It is not. It is included in the Chapter 1 of the Constitution, and together with other principles, it forms the fundamentals of the constitutional system, constitutional structure of the country. All other norms of domestic law have to correspond to them. Second, nowadays international law is not a foreign body. It's not a foreign body, I would say so, in the internal life of the state. It is rather a usual legal tool, as well as domestic law, in the activities of all state organs, citizens, private persons, legal entities and organizations, and most of all, of the courts, of national courts. And third, we can see from the constitutional provision of Part 4, Article 15 of the Constitution that national law and international law exist and operate together in the domestic legal system. Being a part of it, international law, unlike in some legal systems of other countries, is an important source of law within the national jurisdiction. And Article 15 also states that if an international treaty of the Russian Federation establishes rules other than those stipulated by the law, the rules of the international treaty shall apply. It's one of the main permission, and we will talk about this again later. This presumes that, in contrast to many contemporary constitutions, which usually refer either to treaties or to international custom, Article 15 incorporates both treaty and the generally recognized principles and norms of international law. And it also establishes a higher status for treaty rules than for contrary domestic laws. A higher status. Another source of law in our legal system, which our national courts also apply, decisions of the European Court of Human Rights. My colleagues, Professor Kogler and Dr. Popov, will tell about them more deeply, but just few phrases. In a sense, the precedents of the European Court of Human Rights are binding on all Russian courts, on all. Russia is a party to the Convention of Human Rights and its protocols, and Articles 15, 17 and 46 of the Russian Constitution incorporate the provisions of the Convention into Russian domestic legal system and guarantee Russian citizens the right to appeal to this European Court. The Russian Constitutional Court cites and applies decisions of the European Court of Human Rights, I would say, constantly, permanently. And the Supreme Court and the Supreme Arbitrage Court of the Russian Federation have also cited the Convention and decisions of the European Court a dozen times also. Status of international law in the Russian legal system. So, let me take this one. So, in the legal system of the country, of the Russian Federation, which what law operates and functions? So national law, domestic law, and international law. About international law is not a foreign body, I repeat again, in the internal life of the state. It is rather a usual legal tool in the activities of all subjects of law. And if so, The next question logically arises. What is the status of these norms? I mean, norms of international law. Or, in other words, do they become norms of domestic law? And do sources of international law, treaties and international customs, etc., become sources of domestic law or not? And how international courts have to correlate norms of domestic law and international law, and how they have to decide in every particular case on the basis of what law, national law, international law, or some other way. So, frankly speaking, answers on this and other questions have been done by scholars and researchers in international law and by judicial practice. By scholars, researchers, and judicial practice, I underline, not by legislation. I mean, we cannot find answers on these questions in the legislation. These conclusions, necessary conclusions, have made by the doctrine and judicial practice. And after the adoption of the 1993 Constitution, an entire doctrine of use, implementation, and application of international law norms, international legal system, has been elaborated by the doctrine with regard to court and other state borders practice. International law norms are an expression of agreed views and positions of the states, but not of a view of one state, of one particular state. Thus, they should be interpreted and enforced by the states and their domestic borders in terms of objects and purposes of principles of international law, not by processes of national law. This is a clear and generally recognized provision of the core document of international law treaties, the Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties of 1969. So I would stop for a while now, just because to make a short break again and to give a word to my colleague. So now I would offer you this